You're listening to Straight Heat on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
And joining us on the hotline right now, he covers college hoops, CBS Sports. He's Reed Forgrave. Hey, Reed, how you doing?
Not much, man. Just your typical busy news day for college hoops in August, you know?
You know, before we get into college hoops, we've got to ask a question here. You also write for the New York Times Magazine and for GQ. What do you write about for them?
You know, I'm kind of all over the place. I was just telling Jose, your producer, that I'm in the midst of writing a book right now that's relating to a story I wrote for GQ last year about football and CTE. It's a 24-year-old man who committed suicide after, and he'd only played football through high school, and it turns out he was diagnosed with CTE. So not always the happiest stories, but I wrote something about the world's largest lottery scam, where a guy worked for the lottery and for New York Times Magazine a few months ago, and he worked for the lottery, and he figured a way to fix the lottery so he knew what numbers were coming out. If that's not the perfect crime, at least until he got caught, I don't know what it is, man.
All right, if you fix the lottery and then you win, isn't the first job like move to like a beach country that doesn't have extradition?
Go to Aruba, exactly. Like go far, far away, or Switzerland or something where you can hide your money. Instead, this guy, over the course of about 10 years, it was a great scheme until he got too cocky about it. But over the course of about 10 years, this man from Iowa, originally from Texas but lived in Iowa, and he won six different lotteries in, I think, five different states, and managed to get, like, other people to claim them. One of them was his brother, who also got convicted of this crime. And until he decided he was going to go buy a lottery ticket on his own instead of getting someone else to buy it, and it turned out it was, like, a massive jackpot of $16 million. And that raised all sorts of red flags, especially when his face popped up in the surveillance video. That was a fun story to do. But, you know, the perfect crime until you get caught, until you get greedy, right?
See, all he had to do was call me up, and I totally would have been the bag man. No problem.
I'll be your patsy, bro. I'll be your patsy. I'll be your dupe. I don't care.
I'll be your fall guy, as Chris Carter says. Gotta have a fall guy. Like, hey, I'll go buy the ticket. No problem. Reed Forgrave covers college hoops for CBS Sports. Reed, a lot of announcements coming out of the NCAA today. Now, there's some that everybody is hitting on, and there's some that seem to be sliding under. The biggest ones that I think most people are talking about is the fact that some of these, you know, high-ranking high school and college players will be allowed to have agent representation, and that if they decide to enter the draft and they don't get drafted, they could go back to school. It's about time, but if you could, as I'm sure you can explain it better than a lot of other people can, are there any secret underlines to this thing, like if, when, that, the other, you know, is it like you have to pay off the NCAA a lot of money in order to get this? Like, are there any caveats to it? How is this actually going to work?
So here's the deal. I mean, there was a lot of news to parse today. And what was interesting about this news that you started to hit on there is that some of the stuff that I think was actually the big news from today got a little bit swept under the rug. Whereas the things that got the biggest headlines, I'm not sure if they were that big of a deal. The two biggest headlines, I thought, from today, the ones that were written about and that were trumpeted the most by the NCAA were the ones you just mentioned. The players are now able to get agents, whether they're college players or eventually if and when the NBA allows high school players to go straight to the NBA. Then high school players will be able to get agents right before their senior year of high school, those who are deemed elite. That's one thing that was deemed as really big news. But is that really big news when it's happening anyway? Like, this to me is like, how's this any different than gambling's legalized? Oh, yeah, gambling's happening anyway. Oh, like, hey, guys, marijuana's legal. Hey, guess what? People are doing it anyway. These elite high school and college players, they're not dumb. They've been talking to agents all through their career, ever since they've been identified. I think this is a good move by the NCAA. Don't get me wrong. I think it is a step in the right direction, but all it really does is take something that's happening anyway and is technically illegal and brings it above the board. The other part that gets the big headline from today is for players who enter into the draft and don't get drafted are now allowed to get back to college. Is this a good thing? Absolutely. It's absolutely a good thing. However, read the fine print here. The fine print says it's only players who were invited to the NBA Combine who are then undrafted. Only players who were invited to the Combine and undrafted who are allowed to come back into college. By the way, in last year's draft, there were exactly 7 players total who were invited to the Combine, who put their names in the draft, and then went undrafted. 2 of those players were Brian Bowen and the guy from Kansas, Billy Preston, who both of them had eligibility issues anyway, so they wouldn't have been able to go back to college. So really, there were 5 players who could have done this. So it's not exactly one of those sweeping rules. It's a step in the right direction, absolutely. I don't think anyone can deny that. But these 2 pieces of news, to me, are kind of small potatoes. The big potatoes, ironically, is the stuff that I thought got swept under the rug. One is that the NCAA really upped its punishments for the rule breakers, saying not just that the punishments are bigger for coaches and athletic directors, but going after the administrators of colleges, presidents and chancellors. That is a really big deal. This will put schools on notice to say, hey, we're actually taking this seriously. The once toothless NCAA is trying to give itself some teeth, or at least, you know, some dentures or something like that. The other part, and I'll stop after this, I promise, but the other part that I thought was big news that got a little bit swept under the rug was the NCAA saying we can use outside investigations as evidence in our own investigations. Read between the lines here. What that is, hey, we don't have to conduct our own investigation relating to this FBI scandal that's going on right now. We can just take the FBI's evidence and use that to punish schools. That's a big deal. What Dan Wolkin of USA Today, the way that he put it, is that it's basically the NCAA giving itself subpoena power. And look, it's all a proposal. We'll see how this stuff actually works in practice. But those 2 things, I think, are really big deals and could go a long way to clean up the dirty morass that is college basketball. And as much as people want to roll their eyes at the NCAA, and believe me, like, I get it. Like, NCAA does a lot of weird things, and they're a bureaucracy, and they move slowly. But I do think all these things are, I don't have as many problems with them as a lot of the reporters, college basketball reporters, did today. They weren't all done in the perfect way, all these fixes, but I think all of them are steps in the right direction.
I thought that the point you made about going under the radar with the punishments to the universities, the longer bans in the postseason, going up the line at the universities, so it won't just stop with the coach and maybe the AD, that the NCAA is going to go all the way up the line, puts a little more emphasis on administrators. Because, you know, one of the things, and I've long held to this theory, is, you know, the idea that, oh, well, this coach is doing things he shouldn't do. But they all know that he's doing these things. I mean, the AD knows, the president knows. This is a concerted effort of, yeah, they're gonna skirt some rules, but we're gonna win games. And winning games means money, and that's what we want. So we're more concerned about the money and winning than we are about, well, skirting some rules. But now because normally, oh, well, you know, the coach skirted some rules. Okay, so he's fired, but we're gonna pay him all this money. And then in a year or two, he's going to pop up somewhere else and coach another program and get more millions of dollars. It's like, there's not really a punishment. You know, he gets a vacation that's paid for millions of dollars. Now it's like, okay, well, we're going to believe that all of you have some culpability in this, and academia people aren't going to want to pay the price for athletics because they're academia people. That right there, I think, is an incredibly big move by the NCAA, because now it's not just, all right, well, you can just lay all the blame on the coach, fire him, give him a golden parachute, and start over. Now there's a lot more culpability.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The, I mean, look, there was, gosh, 5, 6, 7 years ago, there was another one of these incremental rule changes that I kind of call like the buck stops here rule, where a coach can't say, well, I didn't know. My assistant or my director of basketball operations might have been cheating, but I didn't know, so I'm safe. It's the, you know, hear no evil, see no evil. The rule change said it doesn't matter if you don't know. The buck stops there with you, coach. You are held culpable. And this just ratchets that up one more degree. And look, shady things happen in college basketball. Shady things are going to continue to happen in college basketball and all of college sports, especially the ones that make money, because just the nature of a supposedly amateur business that rakes in millions upon millions of dollars a year, that creates a black market. But all these incremental rule changes, I think, do go a ways in cleaning up this problem within college sports. What I'm disappointed with, and I think a lot of the, you know, what I would say the right-thinking college basketball and basketball pundits out there are disappointed with, is that the NCAA didn't go further. Instead of these incremental rule changes that they address today, all important, all, I think, steps in the right direction, but they didn't go after the core problem. Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted about this earlier today. They didn't go after the core problem of the amateurism model. That model is, if not broken, it's at the very least antiquated. Just have guys who are, you know, in these two revenue sports. They're essentially, anyway, not to get too deep into this, but this is, it's a socialistic model. You have two sports, men's basketball and football, that prop up every other sport that's under the NCAA's jurisdiction that doesn't make money. If you're a fan of socialism, then you should be a fan of this. If you're not a fan of socialism and you think the revenue producers should be seeing a bigger cut of the pie, then you should wonder, hey, NCAA, why didn't this massive commission that's taken nearly a year address this bigger unfairness in college sports, which I think has to do with the revenue producers getting a fair share of the pie of what they're producing instead of, you know, getting tuition and an extra stipend on top of that. Why can't they make money off their name and likeness? Has the Olympics really been dirtied all that much now that Michael Phelps can make millions upon millions of endorsements while still being technically an amateur athlete? No, we love the Olympics. That model works. I don't see why, like, that was hardly addressed. None of it was in all the rule changes today, but I also feel throughout the process, what we saw publicly at least, that stuff was never even addressed. They're so married to this concept of amateurism that I think needs a, you know, there is something pure about it. We can scoff at it as much as we want, but I think the atmosphere of a college football game is 10 times better than the atmosphere of an NFL game, because there's something powerful there. There's something young and innocent, even though we all know it's not really that innocent. But the fact that they didn't address this and at least look at reexamining the core of collegiate sports, I think that is a big swing and a miss. I think all these other fixes around the margins are important, but I think they kind of miss what should have been a huge opportunity to rethink this sport for the 21st century.
Yeah, Reed, I'm with you on that because, you know, if Olympians can be amateurs and make millions of dollars in endorsements, why can NCAA players not make a penny on an endorsement without no longer being called an amateur? And I've long held it's not about money, it's about power. The NCAA uses
Absolutely.
It. It's to control the athletes to continue their monopoly and just make billions of dollars off the backs of, you know, thousands of athletes who are, you know, out there busting it, trying to make it hopefully to the next level. And it's like an indentured servitude for them where, listen, you can't make a dollar, but we're going to let you have like this, you know, we'll call it a paid internship because we'll pay for your college that you're never actually going to use anyway. And,
sure. And you know,
get
like,
you ready.
Division I college athletes, especially in these revenue sports, they're not penalists. Not all of them. Some of them, I think, might be. And you hear stories. We remember when Shabazz Napier said that at the Final Four a few years ago, that he couldn't afford to get sued. And I've heard stories like this from coaches. But generally speaking, these guys, they get a stipend. They get great food and board. And they're not – it's not like they are starving in order to go play their sport for free. They have decent lives for those 4 years.
but it's not anywhere near what their market value is and should be. It's a depressed or suppressed market value, and that's what the NCAA does. And if there's one, I'm right now kind of straddling between the college basketball world and the NBA world. And if there's one, the biggest difference to me that you just hit on between these two worlds is the NBA is a league that's controlled by the players, where the players have a huge amount of the power. Whereas in college sports, it's all about the coaches and administrators, and the players don't have that sort of power. And there needs to be, and there has been, not nearly as much as there should be, there has been a shift toward empowering student-athletes and empowering the players, but it is still the power lies with the administrators, the power lies with the coaches, and let's be honest, the power lies with the older white men, generally speaking. And I know it's weird to bring race into this situation, but the reality is, if you look at big-time college football and big-time college basketball, there's definitely a racial dynamic at play here.
Reed Forgrave covers college hoops for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter, at Reed Forgrave. Reed, great convo, man. Appreciate the info. We'll catch up soon.
All right, brother. Thanks a lot.
All right, Reed Forgrave, CBSSports.com. Would you be down for a revival of this show next?